Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Dedicated to Henry Farman. In the year of the primal form, the door of
Welcome, my friends, to episode 190. Well, is it 196? It's about something like that. We're heading towards the mythical, magical... Well, is it? The mythical, magical 200 number. Who knew when I started this we would get to episode 200? Well, thank you if you've been following me throughout this odd and erratic and all-over-the-place journey. But it is what it is. And today I'm going to keep talking about... Well, you had a little musical interlude last week with the conversation between me and Joe about, you know, who took glue in what line for which gig in 1989 and all that kind of thing. But today I'm going to return back to the subject of why nothing makes sense, why we seem to be living in an upside-down world where we're invited by the powers that be and even the powers that, shall not be. Someone I was speaking to the other day told me that they think the song The Thing That Shall Not Be on Master Puppets is a weak link on that album. I said, you're a fool. You're a fool. What a foolish thought. Anyway, also these thoughts that gather between us socially, culturally, and that have us at loggerheads, why we are being divided and conquered, in my opinion, by the powers that be. I'm going to take a little look at some of the reasons, maybe why. Maybe I'll even get into a third part of this. But lots of people seem to like that discussion a few weeks ago about why nothing really seems to make sense anymore, and encouraged me to kind of keep going with that. And remember, the nature of Agitators Anonymous is freedom of speech, and that skepticism is the most rational perspective, and that ultimately I think many of the things we divide ourselves by are just, we're being played. It's divide and conquer tactics by the powers that be to have us at each other's throats over very small matters, and then to also bring in by stealth huge matters. Distractions, my friends, distractions. So before I get into that, the podcast as ever is sponsored by the valiant and reliable Metal Blade Records, who are the home of Primordial, among many, many other bands. And you can go to indiemerch.com / Metal Blade Records, use the promo code AA2024, especially in the USA, it's a very good idea, and you can get 10% off your order. And believe me, within the USA, North America, all that kind of stuff, this is a pretty big saving. Seeing as we're coming to America very, very soon, we have a few dates with Bloodbath and Archgoat with Primordial. Yes, following on from Maryland Death Fest, some of you might have seen us at in London and Glasgow last weekend. Well, great weekend. We thank you all for that very much. But yes, Metal Blade Records. And also, today's sponsor... the band is Elusive God from Croatia, and next Tuesday you're going to hear a full song from them. It's really good, really strong traditional doom, strong vocals, strong melody, strong harmonies. You're going to hear a little bit underneath what I'm talking about here. And have a look out for that entire song next Tuesday. And if you think like this seems like a good idea for you to promote your band, well, get in touch with me. All right, let's get into this. Why nothing seems to make sense. I have a feeling that basically, or maybe what the West in its current state, we've sort of inherited some of the traits from an old Eastern European model. Let me explain. In my room, there's a framed copy of Pravda, originally the state-sponsored newspaper of the Soviet Union. It's late 1960s, I think. Actually, it's the year 1968. Obviously, it was the propaganda arm of the Soviet state. 1968. Now, what happened in 1968? This is the year that the tanks rolled into Prague in the Czech Republic, in Czechoslovakia. And actually, I think that might be where I bought this magazine, as a curio from an antique shop in the early 90s. And it's a warning to some despots. Maybe they're looking up from us in hell. That eventually you end up in a frame on the wall of a novelty bar, ironically dedicated to your despotism. Of course, that is not before which you've racked up a huge body count. But I've had many a beer in many a bar under the watchful eye of Stalin, Mao, Lenin, Tito even, and on and on. Admittedly, mainly leftist tyrants, but there you go. There hasn't been much call for the Goering Tiki Bar. But that's the way the cookie crumbles, my dear Herman. I wonder if there's anything in that. Who knows? My advice to all despots and tyrants, hang on in there while you can. You'll have a novelty menu named after you at some stage in the afterlife. But now that I look at it, there's a copy of the Beastie Boys album License to Ill sitting on top of it. No sleep till Stalin, my friends. What am I talking about? Well, as I did in the late 90s and early 2000s, do a lot of travelling around Eastern Europe, and still to this day speaking to people, but you talk to anyone who lived in Eastern Europe behind the Iron Curtain, and they will tell you the media was an arm of state propaganda that simply told you 2 + 2 = 5, and you had to go along with it. Now, if you listen to my podcast about Orwell, about 1984, you've probably heard those recent quips or seen those T-shirts, Make Orwell Fiction Again. And, you know, when you address things like hate speech, maybe you've even listened to the podcast I did about Ireland's new hate speech, incoming hate speech laws. These are Orwellian concepts. This comes from Orwell, from 1984. And that's what happened in the narrative of 1984. The people were told 2 + 2 = 5, and they had to simply go along with that. Orwell didn't get it from nowhere. He was a fierce critic of the communist regime, and this is what he was taking aim at. 2 + 2 = 5, and you had to go along with it. You might have had, perhaps, an oblique, dark laugh about it after half a bottle of vodka on your crumbling balcony, as you've seen those housing estates or those tower blocks all across Eastern Europe, if you're like me, are fascinated by brutalism, which is the architecture of the Soviet state, then you've been sort of, I find these really desolate places, and, you know, I've been in Russia and got off the train, walked around, you know, what seems like a brutalist tower block structure just dropped in a frozen tundra, and you have to marvel at that very word, its brutality, its brutalism. I find it fascinating. But let's say you're on your crumbling balcony facade, drinking vodka long into the night with a fellow comrade. And the state tells you, yields are up, productivity is up, industry is up. But yet, when you go down to the bakery, there ain't no bread to be had. But the state told you, black was white and white was black, X was Y, and Y was X, and 2 + 2 = 5. And everybody knew it was a lie, but the system just trucked on into the night, sucked up the lies. And if you were, if you were from a particularly pernicious system, you might want to keep that sarcasm to yourself after that bottle of vodka if you could. Or else you could find yourself behind bars. could find yourself in the gulag, could find yourself in solitary confinement, could find yourself in all sorts of places by questioning this insanity, questioning the insanity of a system that told you, of course, one thing, and the other was blatantly obvious when you went to the shops and you saw empty shelves, but then you read in Pravda, oh, well, productivity is up. Eventually, of course, the system buckled under its own weight and its own lies. And then, of course, the scavengers of this 1990s capitalism, you know, this oligarchical capitalism, just feasted on the carcass of all the industry left with its innards and guts bare and open. And quite a feast they had until our boy Putin put them back in line. Well, now, that was either way you went from the frying pan into the fire. But the state tried to factor into its production every tiny item that people might need, from toothbrushes to underpants. I kid ye not, the overreach of a massive state apparatus was what people lived under. Beginning to sound a bit familiar, beginning to feel like that structure is being built over you in the West right now, or a variation of that. But maybe you've seen the documentary, how Blue Jeans brought down the wall. But, you know, as they say, the aspiration to own blue jeans helped bring down the wall, amongst many other things. People just want stuff. They are aspirational. They want to move up the ladder. They want to own things. And those things could be the instruments of rock and roll. Who knows? Now, say what you want, but about all of this. But on the day that the tanks rolled into Prague, Russian citizens were told that this is what the people of Czechoslovakia wanted. They were more than happy to be brought back into the fold of communism and out of the reach of the evils of capitalism. In fact, the people were thankful. Very much, I suppose, like some similar propaganda to when the tanks rolled into Ukraine recently. At least I think that's what it says in my copy of Pravda. I've done a little bit of an attempted, you know, analysation of the headlines. Well, actually, I just went back online and had a look at what they were saying at the time. But the point was, the people could see the lie. They just had to go along with it. And if you were a young aspiring creative, a young aspiring writer or journalist or musician living in Czechoslovakia at the time, you were going to have to wait about 30 years before the, I think it's the Velvet Revolution, is it, that came to Czechoslovakia and managed to free it from communism. Václav Havel, if I'm not mistaken. But somehow there are distinct echoes between this old state system and this massive state apparatus, and somehow how things seem to be going in the West as we move towards this sort of collectivist idea of rule, where the state seems to have more and more, let's say, apertures. It's able to place its fingers into more and more elements of your life and restrict them. And the potentiality for us to lurch, as I've said before, I might as well mention it once again, into this central bank digital currency, social currency system, we're very, very close to elements of that. And this, if the communist system of the 1960s or 50s or 70s had this technology in their hands, I think they, communism never would have fallen. They must be, as I said, rubbing their collective hands with a form of regretful glee at the potentiality of the West to lurch into this Chinese state model, the CCP model, this social credit score system. Oh, Alan, that's not going to happen. Well, I hope you're right. But we should be worried about these things, because this sort of this digital oligarchy, this sort of digital technocratic collectivist model that we seem to be sort of moving in, which allows the state huge powers over your individual autonomy, seems to be somehow baked into the next 5 or 10 years. I told you this is what we're going to talk about today, so don't look at me like that. I was watching an interview with a young man who was working for Putin. It's maybe a decade or so more old by now, this interview, before the gears of social media had properly been wound up. And it's odd and curious that it hasn't come up again to see. I cannot remember his name, but he was in his late 20s, early 30s, and he'd studied, if I'm not incorrect, at drama school and then went on to politics. And he'd learnt the performative nature, obviously, of his schooling could be applied to politics. And with a twinkle in his eye, he told the reporter, he said, "Look, I own the left. I own the right. When I want, I can bring them out on the streets to fight each other or fight whoever I want. We fund them all. There aren't really any sides. They might think there are sides. They might think they're enemies. That's part of the game. But they're not. They're compromised and all within my reach. And you, the people, should be in a constant state of fear. People should be living in a constant state of fear and emergency. It's in this state that they consume. It's in this state that they obey the rules. This constant state of emergency, of never knowing what is true or not. That is the absolute aim." And he just said, "Because at my will I can divide and conquer all sides." Is Putin walking through the rubble in Crimea, or is he not? Is he really on horseback in the Urals? Is that hospital real? Is anything real? Is that scene of a bombing from 5 years previous and just reframed in a modern context? Is anything real? And it feels somehow that in our modern Western society, after this decade-long mental bombardment by social media, that these same society-styled dark arts have been at play in our own societies. No, maybe they were always at play, Alan. Oh, democracy, did it ever exist? Alan, I get it. I get the compromised nature of these things and lobby groups and the fact that politicians were always one thing or the other, or elements of them were lobbied and paid for. But things do feel different. Things do feel a bit different than 5 years ago, don't you think? How do we know? It's a post-truth world, right? I mentioned before, mis and disinformation are going to be these two words that you're going to hear a lot of in the next couple of years, including malinformation, which is truth that just gets in the way of the state's truth. It all sounds very 1968 Pravda to me, if you are, doesn't it? And what a dream 1968 Pravda would have had to be able to look into the future and see the possibility that the West would adopt a social credit score system linked to central bank digital currency. Because if this is, as I said before, where we go, and it does seem we hear and see our politicians talking about this. They're very open about the idea that their financial system itself needs to change. Some would say it feels like they're doing all they can to crash it and then rebuild it from the ground up. But if you, as I said, are getting digital money from the state, or you've got everything is digital. I mean, I watched a guy in front of me in the airport the other day try and use his, in Ireland we have Revolut or whatever it's called, and his phone just wouldn't work, and he just couldn't pay for what he had. And I've known people who I've gone away on trips with, and they've had no cash, no money, no credit cards, no nothing, just their phone. And I'm like, what if your phone is stolen? What do you do? What if your phone doesn't work? What if you can't connect to the internet? What if the app doesn't work? What if the app gets hacked? What if if everything gets hacked and everything goes down? You're going nowhere. And that's a sort of emergency state, right? But what if that emergency state is forcibly implemented? Oh, you sound like a conspiracy theorist. Well, it would seem to me that in the nature of all things, having a complete digital monopoly on all of these things is a bad idea, isn't it? Having one digital platform through which you can literally be unpersoned or personed, unpersoned and back and forth by the powers that be. It's the sort of uberization of our social interaction. We are required to rate each other once we've met or once we've interacted. In China, things like you can jaywalk, you can cross the road when the lights are not the right color, and facial recognition will frame you and just fine you straight from your bank account, or you will have privileges of travel withdrawn. And this seems to be the way we're heading. I mean, you try arguing with a robot cop. I know, a robocop. It sounds incredible. But if we look at the way policing is going, we look at the way society is going, in 10 years, are we saying that there won't be drones doing the work of cops? Try reasoning with a drone that, so you've been out in the piss all night and you forgot your phone and you left it, blah, blah, blah. Well, now. Now, there are people, of course, who will accuse me of scaremongering or being a conspiracy theorist. And, you know, you can do that if it makes you, sleep easier. But these are very genuine worries. And leaders of huge countries, Rishi Sunak himself has been championing digital currencies. And the social credit score system already exists in a huge country which has massive influence in this world. That is no doubt that our leaders in the West have openly admired. And that is what's happening in China. My friends from the band Grave My Husband went over there and played recently, and I was having a conversation with them, and I said, hey, look, is this real or is this just, you know, this sort of media over here scaremongering us? And they were just like, no, it's very real. That is really how things are there. But it seems like all part of an ongoing war on reality, but also an ongoing war on your civil liberties, your autonomy, all those kind of things. The idea that in this constant state of heightened emergency, you need to be kept safe and let us do the keeping of your safety. Some of you might have been paying attention to the Google AI image generator scandal recently. It's called Gemini that was released. I don't know if you've been paying attention to it, but maybe go and have a look at the story because it's absolutely insane. You probably saw... If you weren't paying much attention, it's a new AI image generator that you can use to ask questions of and generate historical images. Now, although I noticed, of course, most media didn't cover it, nor did many people seem to be sharing its images on Instagram. But if you don't know about it, basically this new AI generator has clearly been programmed to combat racism wherever it finds it and promote equity. And that includes across history. So we got with Gemini images of black Vikings. All the founding fathers were ethnic, but also black SS soldiers. Because oddly enough, the AI decided that somehow it was racist to imply that all of the SS were white. So in the interest of diversity, it made high-ranking members of the SS ethnic and Asian. Much laughter ensued. Of course, it's insanely ridiculous. But... there's something very, very dark about all this. Firstly, how did its creators not realize that it would do this? Surely they road tested it and asked it to make some of these images, because these were the first things people asked it. And then they had to marvel at the insanity of the results that came up. And that people in an instant would ask it to generate images like this one and find its flaw. But are its creators going to go back to the drawing board and program the AI to tell history as it is? And not to falsify history, or simply go back to the drawing board and try and find a way to make the program less gameable, but still have the same intent, which is, I imagine, what they will do. But what does this mean? That AI will simply erase any truth about European history? I don't know. I'm Irish. You know this. So what if I put into this platform, give me an image of the Irish famine. I want an image of the poor, destitute and hungry, waiting on the dockside at Skibbereen, waiting to board a coffin ship to the United States in 1846. Give me that image. And it would, of course, give me a diverse queue of people, right? Changing Irish history, changing my history. And what right has a programmer from Silicon Valley to do so? Would it create ethnically diverse queues to board the trains to Auschwitz? Let that sink in. And you may go, oh, it's, you know, you're overhyping this. You're being too extreme about analyzing it. But that's now. How does it look in 5 or 10 years? I mean, we can kind of laugh it off now, but find the images amusing. We can roll our eyes. Those crazy guys in Silicon Valley. But like I said, how does this look in 5 or 10 years? When children have grown up with this platform or variants of it, and books are a long distant prospect for education, the owning and altering of history right before your eyes, this war on reality or a past reality. And that's before we get to this idealism paired with the other powers AI has or will have, and how we as a society are going to have to get used to them. If your child has an AI tutor, which is highly likely at some stage in the future, if there's another lockdown, for example, this is the future. You're going to get AI tutors. Yes, indeed. What if this is the version of history they'll be taught? are you, as parents, going to be able to, who are you going to stand up to go, this is incorrect, when all of these things have been baked into the system? All of Europe's history changed and altered to meet the DEI whims of a Silicon Valley ideologue who will say they are doing things for the greater good. They think they're doing the right thing, but the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? You may say, oh, you're being over the top. Ah, maybe so. But the podcast is called Agitators Anonymous. What do you want? Yet, in the ultimate ironic take, give me the surnames of some of those people in Silicon Valley who feel they're doing the right thing, and I guarantee you there's some Irish in there. That's where their ancestors came from. So those people, their ancestors probably came across on the very coffin ships that they are now programming an AI to demonstrate as being diverse. Is your brain broken yet? But you look out the window and everything looks fine. And I agree to a point. But that's, as I said, the nature of this podcast. And their aspirations. Now, people say to me, you know, we have laws to stop that. It'll never happen. Maybe, maybe not. I would contest that many sovereign nation states have been hollowed out by the power of the multinational and their aspirations. So do you trust your government to get a handle on this universal problem? How could the Irish state bring in rules to deal with, for example, the portrayal of the history of the Irish famine as rewritten by an AI language model in a future where maybe your children are being taught by an AI tutor, which it could be 5, it could be 10, it could be 15 years. I would say not a chance they have the possibility of regulating that. I mean, I hope you're right and I'm wrong. And I've said that throughout, even from the start of the podcast. I do hope to be wrong about many of the things that I'm saying. But, you know, you aren't here for cheery bonhomie and glass half full analysis, right? It's an ongoing war on reality. Some intentional, some just accidental. It's an ongoing war. Who can possibly believe what's true or not? Taylor Swift could swing the election. Headline. Huh? What? But who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline? Could you tell me that? Who cares? Watch Johnny Depp and Amber Heard in court. Become emotionally invested in that. Don't look over here. I understand it. Trying to make sense of all of this. Normal people just switch off. Of course, as in the previous podcast where I discussed this, why nothing makes sense. I discussed the media role in all of this and their partisan take on things. But people clock out. They simply can't take anymore. I was asking my friend at the weekend, can you name any European leaders? We're sitting around a table, Primordial had just played with Necronautical in Glasgow, and we were hanging out afterwards, and I just said to them, name me some European leaders. Seriously. At a push, they could name Macron. Now, maybe some of you might go, oh, Meloni or Orban, but the German Prime Minister, Chancellor, who is that? Do you know? They were household names in the 80s and the 90s growing up. I knew who they all were. Does your average teenager the same age as I was back then know this? I have no idea. I severely doubt it. I return to the idea of the hollowing out of the nation state where politics had been more or less entirely bought and sold. Maybe not entirely, but to a large part. And when we have conflicts somehow in my childhood, I do remember hearing the words ceasefire, the negotiating table. 3 words you heard a lot in Ireland growing up. Who do we send to negotiate an end to the bombing in Gaza or Ukraine? Certainly not someone on the paycheck of Lockheed Martin or Raytheon. Remember the pullout from Afghanistan? Didn't they leave like $50 billion worth of equipment behind? I guess they'd been paid for. Kind of a sort of dine and dash, right? You just have the sense now that politics is largely performative. Maybe it always was, and just maybe the veil has been lifted on it. And we as people, seems we can't even agree that there was a Hamas attack. People have said as much right to my face. And what do you say? You just have to go, well, we can't agree even on this. And what's clear to me as part of the state of confusion is the clear understanding by these platforms and people in positions of power. Let's say that TikTok is something like a psyop in operation right in front of us all. It's clear. It's destroying young people's minds, and yet we as a society sort of sit back and go, look, keeps them busy, keeps them out of my hair. But it's part of the process of, I would say, an infantilization of society where childhood is partially being destroyed. We ask kids to make adult decisions, and this sits comfortably with some of us. And yet, we were just children. We know in our right minds we were not able to make adult decisions as children. But we, as adults, have kind of left the room. We've abdicated our responsibility. And what we've done, or we want to do, is to create a society where adults can remain children and children are expected to be adults. If you've ever watched a baby work in a smartphone, you can see in a dark, dark way why this is happening or being pushed. The removal of consent, convert children to whatever you can get them to pay attention to. Consumers from birth, almost, and use this to destroy the fabric of society. Oh, Alan, that's a bit extreme. Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not. But no one can tell me that part of this war on reality is placing power socially and culturally in the hands of children. As I said before, the Greta paradox, which I made a podcast about before. What grown politician wants the video clip going viral of them shouting at a kid? So a kid has been sent in to do the adult's dirty work. And I feel sorry for her, a modern day Joan of Arc. But it still sets a dangerous precedent. And, you know, goddamn, the Catholic Church would have loved to have got a hold of TikTok, huh? They missed a trick by a decade or two. And yet, I have sympathy with young people. I really do. Why, on some level, why wouldn't you want to tear down the whole system? You watch two octogenarians battle for control of the US presidency, who barely seem capable. You will never own somewhere to live. You cannot aspire to own a house. You're saddled with huge college debt. I can see why. If you don't allow young people into this system, then why wouldn't they want to tear it down on some level? And who is there to blame for that? It doesn't seem real. You're on Instagram, you're watching reels of Biden, who, you know, it's like Weekend at Bernie's. He really doesn't seem to know where he is. And in a way, I feel kind of sorry for him. And then you've got, you know, then the next, you know, reel, or there you watch a news show and they're, you know, shouting you down, telling you he's entirely competent and that his age is his strength. Ignorance is strength, another quote from 1984. But I think so much of it is just the narcissistic, selfish impulses of modern social media. And it's hardly surprising. It tells us, it tells you, you are the star of the movie of your life. Everything and everyone else is just part of your backstory. So if in this movie you decide that the world has to believe that 2 and 2 is 5, then why shouldn't it? Why shouldn't the world bend to how you feel about mathematics? And that's what encapsulates this century of the self, as Adam Curtis would have said, where we've abdicated civic responsibility, but also our relationship to things like mathematics, to biology, to all of these kind of, to science even. I'll finish with an argument that I had with somebody somewhere last year, and they were trying to tell me that the structure of mathematics is racist, and it's better to tear it all down. And I mean, it's an idea, it's an argument that's so dumb that it would hurt your brain, but that was kind of where it went. And I said, well, you know, the 60-second minute and 60-minute hour comes from the ancient Sumerians, which is about 5,000 BC. I mean, it's northern Iraq and Iran, not from Europe. In fact, while the Islamic world was flourishing, Europe was about to go into the Dark Ages, if this isn't mis or disinformation, it's just off the top of my head, in the 8th and 9th century. You know, sent there arguably by the imposition of Christianity and destruction of all the old knowledge that went before. And it stayed in the dark until the discovery of some of these ancient teachings from the Greek and Roman world during the Enlightenment. Anyway, we argued back and forth, I digress. But a point was, mathematics ain't made by white men. And said person just stared at me, just wasn't having it, doubled down. And I think that that's just where I'll leave things for this. Maybe there'll be a part 3. But, you know, to this person, I was just the asshole from Primordial who mansplained, you know. And I'm pretty sure said person will go to the next argument and say the exact same thing. The fact that I'd introduced, a truth into the conversation, introduced no epistemology into her, this train of thought. The truth just didn't matter. The truth did not matter. this was the idea, and therefore you could use it to attack tutors, to attack the college system, to attack all of these structures. Because you said, well, this is my truth. My truth is that mathematics represents this. But mathematics is the fundamentals of our understanding of the universe. You can find the Fibonacci or the pi sequence in everything from Andromedas to snails, you know, to it's mind-boggling how much of the world is explained by mathematics. But if you decide that you can discount it because you've decided that it's its origins are evil, or its origins are something that you no longer want to listen to because you've framed it as being a certain thing in your head. And well, then this just unmoors every understanding of our relationship to civilization. And you're just floating out into the ether, into the sea. And eventually you just become so far from the shore of understanding that there ain't no way back. There ain't no way back. And this just feeds into the divide and conquer nature of the tribalistic nature of modern society, that we're encouraged to not find the things that we have in common, but the things we don't. And so the middle ground is just destroyed. Sitting on the fence is just bombed to bits, and everyone has to move sideways into their tribal divisions and just take pot shots at each other. And the political elite class are laughing all the way to the bank. Like I said, I view myself as politically homeless. Maybe you do too. Well, I think we're going to have to do a part three of this rambling dissection of why there's a constant war on reality. Well, my friends, Agitators Anonymous, it's a confusing and all over the place, complete off the top of my head brain meltdown. Maybe let's talk about music next time. Agitators Anonymous, over and out. Please remember the tenets are free speech and skepticism is the only rational perspective, and that we should attempt to find common ground with those we disagree with and defend their right to speak as well. It does us no good to be divided into our tribes.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.